I think everybody has made their own assessment of President Trump's character, and so far as I know, you don't pay someone $130,000 not to have sex with you.
Well, that's a strange way to put it, Mitt Romney. But I take your point.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on some fine internet affiliates as well, including the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. This just in as we go to air, Desi Doyen. Sad, sad story.
Okay.
CNN reports that disgraced, expelled, and federally indicted Republican, now former Congressman George Santos, is withdrawing his independent bid to return to Congress this year.
Oh, that is too bad.
And he was so beloved by so many folks in New York. Anyway, welcome to the Bradcast, where we will be focusing on people actually running for office this year. Though some of them are also facing federal indictments, as it turns out. All right, voters in the great state and presidential battleground state, or Commonwealth, of Pennsylvania headed to the primary polls on Tuesday. Though the presidential contests are effectively already decided for each party, there is unlikely to be much drama there, but there are a number of other races on the ballot, including a U.S. Senate primary, although in that case, both the Republican and the Democratic nominees are running uncontested, so not a lot of drama there either, though there are congressional primaries and state and local contests on Tuesday's ballot. Plus, as we've discussed, primary elections are a good opportunity for voters to make sure that they are registered to vote as they think that they are, that they have not been somehow removed from the voting rolls. You don't want to find that out in November.
Yeah.
That they have the right type of IDs, et cetera, required for voting this November, when it will really, really count this year, especially in states or commonwealths like Pennsylvania. For example, there are new voter ID rules, as I understand it, in Pennsylvania, where, you know, of course, in all 50 states, by federal law, first-time voters must show ID the first time that they vote. That's already a federal law in all 50 states. Keep that in mind when you hear Republicans saying, we need voter ID laws. We already have voter ID laws. What they want is incredibly narrow, strict photo ID laws of a certain very specific type that they know that a lot of voters do not have, a lot of specifically Democratic-leaning voters.
That's what they're pushing for. And low-income voters,
right,
too.
But a new law in Pennsylvania, according to our friends at the Nonpartisan Vote Writers Group, requires voters to show an ID the first time that they vote in Pennsylvania at a new precinct. So that means if your precinct itself has moved or been consolidated or has changed somehow with redistricting, et cetera, or you may have moved within the state, you may still need to show an ID in Pennsylvania before you are allowed to vote at that new location for the first time, even if you voted many times while living at that very same location.
Yeah, if you've never moved, but if they change your precinct, then you have to remember to bring your proper, very narrowly targeted photo ID.
And again, you don't want to wait until November after you've been in line for 2 or 3 hours to find out, oh yeah, you don't have the your ID. It's the first time you're voting at this precinct, so go home and get back in line and all that. So we're hearing reports of voters showing up to vote unaware of this new restriction. They've either had to go fetch a valid ID before they can vote, or they were required to vote via provisional ballot, which may or may not be counted based on these new rules. So, that's why voting in primaries and, frankly, voting in all elections is a good idea. But in particular, prior to a presidential general election in the fall. So, you know, along with important non-presidential matters on the ballot, this is one of the reasons why voting in primaries, even when the presidential contests appear to be set, is still important. Happily, I'm not yet hearing of major problems for voters, and turnout was reportedly light on Tuesday in Pennsylvania, though, as you know, we don't often learn about problems with voting and computerized tabulation systems, et cetera, until well after Election Day. That, by the way, is especially true in Pennsylvania, where a number of jurisdictions shamefully still require voters at the polling place to vote on 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems with a record of failure. Yes, I'm talking to you, Northampton County, Pennsylvania. So we will keep our eyes open, and do feel free to send me whatever you happen to hear about or see for yourself in Pennsylvania or anywhere else. Any problems at the polls, please let me know. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. We will, of course, have any noteworthy results coming out of Pennsylvania on our next Bradcast and or beyond as appropriate. For the record, Puerto Rico will hold its Democratic primary this coming weekend on Sunday, April 28. There are Republican state conventions next week in New Mexico and Missouri. And the next full primary date for both parties, it will then be in Indiana on May 7, followed by state primaries in Nebraska, Maryland, and West Virginia on May 14th. Got it?
Yes. And if you know anybody in any of those states, let them know, hey, it's a great time to do a practice vote in the primary.
We will have more on elections and a number of election-related stories of note in a bit. But we are, of course, also keeping our eyes on Donald Trump's ongoing first of hopefully many criminal trials. This one in New York this week, the first ever for any former president. Before we get to the latest there, a quick story that covers both elections and Trump's legal woes in one fell swoop. New fundraising numbers are out this week, according to the Wall Street Journal over the weekend, which reports that, quote, Donald Trump's political money operation spent more than $4 million on legal-related expenses just in March alone. That, according to the new data, they add that $4 million just in March adds to the tens of millions in attorney's fees and related costs that he has spent so far as his first criminal trial begins in New York. All told, they report, Trump's campaign and outside political groups have paid more than $66 million in legal-related costs for Donald Trump since early 2023. That, according to the Journal's review of new campaign filings made public on Saturday. That, they note, translates to about $145,000 a day.
Wow.
which campaign donor money is going to. Campaign donor money to Trump and to his allied GOP groups are now paying just for Trump to defend himself in four different criminal indictments and his various other legal woes. But $66 million since last year. He and his supporters, including his daughter-in-law, the recently crowned as co-chair of the RNC, Laura Trump, as she likes to say, and the others do, everything helps. Even a dollar. Send whatever you can when they ask for donor money. Well, I'm sure that's true that every dollar helps. But what it mostly helps in doing is helping Donald Trump try to keep himself out of jail for stuff like having allegedly stolen highly classified national security documents when leaving office back in 2021 and refusing to give them back to the government in violation of the Espionage Act, trying to steal the 2020 election at both the federal level and specifically in the state of Georgia, and, of course, for trying to cover up his affairs with porn stars and Playboy models just before the 2016 election in what New York prosecutors described on Monday during their opening arguments in the hush money-related case as, quote, election fraud, pure and simple. So that was kind of notable. I hadn't seen that specific quote when we were on air on Monday, that the prosecutors are calling it election fraud, pure and simple. Thank you. Thank you for cutting to the chase of exactly what it was. Also of note on Monday that we didn't have access to in time for our coverage on yesterday's show, as you hopefully know by now, this trial in New York charges Donald Trump with 34 felony counts for 34 falsifications of business records. Essentially, those were the records, such as checks signed by Donald Trump while he served in the White House, that that described payments made to his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, as money for legal services. That's how the Trump Organization described it, when in fact there were actually reimbursements to Cohen for the hush money that he made, that he gave to porn star Stormy Daniels to prevent her, just prior to the 2016 election, from publicly discussing her sexual affair with Trump years earlier while his wife Melania was nursing their infant son. Trump also, by the way, Trump's attorneys also reject the idea that he had any sexual affair with Stormy Daniels, which it seems ill-advised, because now they're going to have to get into that and prove that he either did or didn't, but that's what they are claiming. But the nub of the case, if you will, are these false documents. Now, Trump is claiming that those payments to Michael Cohen were for regular, normal, totally normal legal services rather than for reimbursement for that hush money payment that Cohen had made to Daniels. Cohen, by the way, took out a second mortgage on his house because he didn't have the $130,000 to just give to Daniels. So he took out a second mortgage on his house to give her that money. Now, he might have done it because he's such a swell guy. He just really wanted to help Donald Trump. Donald Trump knew nothing about this, nothing about his own lawyer going to a bank, taking out a loan for $130,000 and giving it to a porn star that
he'd never met before.
That Cohen had never met before. That Cohen had never met before, and that apparently Donald Trump didn't even have sex with. So strange to go to those lengths, you know, as Mitt Romney tried to say at the top there, paying $130,000 for not having sex with someone, I think is what he was trying to say.
Yeah.
But after Cohen had been a Trump attorney for years and years, they had never paid him in this very strange way. These pieces of money each month in a single check signed by Donald Trump with, you know, no payroll, no taxes taken out, et cetera. Until these payments, these specific payments, according to prosecutors. Moreover, Prosecutors explained during their opening arguments that the $460,000 that was paid to Cohn over the following year in 2017, once Donald Trump had won the 2016 election, thanks in no small part to making sure no one knew at the time publicly about the affairs with Stormy Daniels and Playboy model Karen McDougal. So he was paid $460,000 over the following year in monthly payments that were meant to cover the $130,000 payment that Cohn made to Stormy Daniels, also to cover another $50,000 or so that Trump apparently owed Cohn for various campaign-related services. And then that amount, $180,000 was, the, and then there was something else in there that I don't have in front of me, but that amount was then doubled in order to account for the taxes that Cohn would then have to pay on that income from Trump. It was reimbursement. It was not for regular legal services, as the team Trump is trying to claim. Prosecutors are saying it was reimbursement. And it might be just a case of, you know, he said, except that prosecutors revealed on Monday that all of those numbers and how they broke down to come up with that eventual number that they paid to Michael Cohn were specifically written down on paper, broken down. Each and every one of those amounts that were included in those checks were written down on a paper by longtime Trump Organization chief financial officer Alan Weiselberg.
Yes, Weiselberg was taking written notes on a criminal conspiracy.
Now, Weiselberg, by the way, is currently in Rikers Island for the second time in 2 years for having perjured himself while giving testimony in Donald Trump's previous New York trial for the civil fraud trial, which Trump lost and owes almost $500 million on. But prosecutors say that they have that document from Alan Weiselberg breaking down those numbers. That document that, and they will show it to jurors during the course of this case. So, oops, that seems noteworthy from Monday's opening arguments.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, the day began before the jury arrived with a hearing regarding 10 allegations by the 10 instances by the prosecution of Trump having violated his gag order in the case to not talk about witnesses or jurors, etc. The state is seeking a minimum of $1,000 in sanctions per violation, though the judge has made clear that Trump could even be jailed as part of these sanctions if he continues to violate the gag order, if he fails to restrain himself from attacking witnesses and jurors, as Trump did once again on Monday in the court itself, in the courthouse itself, after it had recessed for the day. He described his former attorney, Michael Cohen, who will be a key witness in this case, as a serial perjurer, etc., which would seem to be in strict violation of that gag order. So the hearing on Tuesday morning reportedly did not go well for the defense team, with Justice Juan Merchan at one point telling Trump's lead attorney Todd Blanche, as he tried to defend Trump's gag order violations, specifically via social media, that the attorney was, quote, losing all credibility with this court.
Ouch.
Yep. And that was the day after opening arguments and what's expected to be a 6-week trial. Not off on a good foot, it seems to me, for Trump's lead attorney, Todd Blanche. As of airtime, Justice Merchan has yet to issue his ruling on the sanctions matter for the gag order, but that would be expected soon. After the jury arrived on Tuesday, the first witness on Monday, longtime friend of Donald Trump and former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker, Shut up.
I know.
Pecker was cut short on Monday at the trial. So he took the stand again on Tuesday in the prosecution's case, explaining how the National Enquirer used checkbook journalism to pay sources for their stories, including Donald Trump, over many years during the Apprentice program. Apparently, the National Enquirer paid money to him for scoops on who was being fired that week in The Apprentice, and how he was asked questions about how Pecker and Cohen and Trump all entered into what prosecutors are describing as a conspiracy to produce negative stories about Trump's opponents after he announced his presidential run back in 2015, and to pay off those folks with negative stories about Trump to keep them quiet. For example, the doorman at Trump Tower who claimed that Trump had an out-of-wedlock child with a maid, story that reportedly turns out to be untrue, but the guy was paid $30,000 to shut up about it. The Playboy model Karen McDougal, who maintains that she had a nearly year-long affair with Donald Trump while Melania was pregnant with their son, she was paid off by the Enquirer to purchase her story and then kill it, the catch-and-kill scheme. And adult star, film star, Stormy Daniels, who Cohn paid off for her silence directly before he was reimbursed over the subsequent year by Trump, according to prosecutors, with falsified business statements meant to look like just paying him for normal legal things rather than for reimbursement in order to help him cheat to win the 2016 election in what prosecutors described, as noted, as a case of, quote, election fraud, pure and simple. So we will try to dig down into more of those details, I believe, on tomorrow's broadcast.
Yes.
As the court in this particular New York criminal trial will be taking Wednesdays off for the duration. So we are told. So we can look forward to that as well tomorrow. All right, let's take a quick break here. We'll get to a few election integrity stories of note this week that don't have to do with Donald Trump's criminal trials.
Wait, you mean there's other things going on in this country?
Yeah. Yeah, there is. And if time allows, we may even have some more election fraud stories as well today. All of that and Desi Doyen's Green News Report. That's today, right?
Yes.
That's still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Well, I don't know that she can. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. A very, very sad story to kick off this block. You may recall that Arizona's Kerry Lake and a guy by the name of Mark Fincham, remember him? They were both endorsed by Donald Trump. They both lost their races for governor and Secretary of State, respectively, to Democrats back in 2022.
They're a great pair.
They made all sorts of false claims about the state's voting systems after a programming issue on some print-on-demand ballot printers resulted in ballots that could not be tallied by some of the optical scan computer tabulators at some of Maricopa County voting centers that's in Phoenix that year back in 2022. Now, all of the ballots were eventually counted and nobody was actually turned away from the polls. Everyone who wanted to vote got to vote. But Lake and Fincham, they claimed that this error was part of an insidious scheme by Maricopa County's Republican Registrar of Voters, Stephen Richer, to steal the election for Democrats. Okay? or something in 2022. Richer has since sued Carrie Lake for defamation in a case that it looks like she is likely to lose. Both Lake and Fincham were defeated by Democrats in an election that year in 22 that was widely viewed as Arizona's rebuke of former President Donald Trump's acolytes who had claimed that the presidential election in the state had been stolen in 2020, and they spent the next several years trying to prove it without any success, other than revealing that Joe Biden appears to have won the state by even more than was originally reported. In any event, Lake, who is now a candidate, Republican candidate for U.S. Senate in Arizona, and Fincham, who is now a candidate for state Senate, they ask the nation's top court to hear their 2022 complaint in mid-March of this year after they had first filed their lawsuit in federal court in Arizona back in April of 2022 when they had asked judges to order Maricopa and Pima counties to stop using computerized tabulators to count ballots. Well, U.S. District Judge John Tucci dismissed their claims and that case in what he called a frivolous complaint way back in August of 22. Tucci later ordered their legal team, the legal teams of Lake and Fincham, to pay six figures in sanctions to deter, quote, similarly baseless suits in the future. Then the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in October of last year upheld that ruling, the lower court's ruling. The case was funded by Mike Lindell, founder of MyPillow.
I'm surprised he still has money.
He did as of last year. That's probably not going to last much longer, I suspect. As the blogger known as Mother Mags over at Daily Kos explained what happened next, Lake and Fincham eventually ran out of courts in Arizona, which at every level had denied their appeals and finally sanctioned their lawyers for filing the same frivolous BS over and over. So in March, they appealed their case to the U.S. Supreme Court. Lake said she had new evidence that was, quote, explosive. On Steve Bannon's War Room program, Mike Lindell said that Lake's claims will, quote, shock the world. Patrick Byrne, the billionaire former CEO of Overstock.com, who also spent millions of dollars on false claims about the 2020 election, he said that their case will, quote, redefine history. Well, it turns out it didn't. The right-wing Supreme Court rejected their case without comment on Monday. Not exactly redefining history. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected that appeal brought by Lake and Fincham, bringing finality to the duo's legal effort challenging the use of electronic voting machines 2 years ago to the day after it began, according to the Arizona Republic. Throughout their 2 years of evidence-free claims, Lake and Fincham and their lawyers echoed the conspiracies about Dominion voting systems that were put forward by Trump and last year resulted in some $787 million being paid by Fox News to Dominion in a settlement over that case. The spokesperson for Lake's U.S. Senate campaign, yes, she's running again. For this time, the U.S. Senate, a spokesperson for the Senate campaign did not respond to a request for comment from the Arizona Republic, nor did Fincham. Several Republican Party organizations, including the Republican Party of Arizona and the Maricopa County Republican Committee, filed briefs urging the nation's high court to take the case, but alas, they did not. Secretary of State Adrian Fontes, a Democrat, whose office Lake and Fincham sued, said in a statement on Monday in response, quote, election deniers have attacked our democracy at every turn, and this decision not to hear the appeal by a conservative Supreme Court underscores deniers' inability to produce a legitimate argument against our elections system. We like Adrian Fontes. He's been on this show in years past. He was the one who actually lost in 2020. He had been the Maricopa registrar. He lost to the Republican, Stephen Richer. And yet, They both agree, Stephen Richer and now Secretary of State Adrian Fontes, he went on to, I guess he failed up in that case. they both agree these guys, Carrie Lake, Mark Fincham, are loons, and they are harming democracy rather than helping it in any way. So that saga, at least for now, now that she has, if you will, taken it to the limit at the U.S. Supreme Court and lost, that saga, for now, would seem to be over. But I'm sure there will be more to come this November, never fear, with both Lake and Fincham likely to be on the ballot once again this November. Lake is currently believed to be the front runner for the GOP nomination for U.S. Senate, where she will run against Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego for the open seat being vacated by former Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema. Arizona's primaries will be held on July 30 this summer. In other Republican U.S. Senate race slash election integrity news today from another battleground, from Battleground, Arizona to Battleground, Wisconsin, the leading Republican candidate in Wisconsin's closely watched U.S. Senate race emphasized last week that he doesn't oppose elderly people voting.
Wait, say that one more time.
Well, according to AP, he's not against it, which does not seem to be a good way for a story to begin.
Yeah, if you have to explain that you're not against elderly people voting,
yeah.
I think you have a problem.
If I'm the Republican U.S. Senate candidate in Wisconsin, that's not great from AP, or frankly from any state for that matter. GOP Senate candidate in Wisconsin, Eric Hovde, who's likely to be the Republican nominee this year, he made the that clarification initially saying that, quote, almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point in life where they're capable of voting. No, almost nobody. Hovde faces incumbent Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin in a race that is essential for Democrats to win this November in order to maintain their currently very slim majority in the Senate. Could be a rough year for Democrats in the Senate. A Marquette University Law School poll this week showed the race in Wisconsin is about even among likely voters. How voters in nursing homes, however, feel about Hovde at this point, well, that may be a different matter. Baldwin and Democrats have been attacking the GOP nominee over the comments that he made first earlier this month, last month, I think, on a Fox News radio show about nursing home votings. Now, I should note the claims about elderly people being coerced by Democrats into voting in nursing homes, that has long been a claim that is made by Republican vote suppressors looking for ways to prevent the elderly, essentially, from voting. The elderly who for years tended to vote more Democratic than Republican. And, you know, they would make these claims as a way to keep them from receiving assistance to vote in nursing homes because they think there is some massive effort by Democrats to use these facilities to steal votes. Who can vote in a nursing home and how they cast their ballots, as AP reports, has been a hot issue in Wisconsin since 2020 when supporters of former President Donald Trump alleged that people were voting illegally. But as noted, this did not just pop up in 2020. It has been a longtime hobby horse of Republicans. So it just reemerged again after 2020 when Republicans were looking for anything they could use to pretend that the election had somehow been stolen from them. Now, no charges were brought against any sort of unlawful voting in nursing homes in Wisconsin, and President Joe Biden's narrow victory over Trump, he won the state by about 20,000 votes in that state in 2020. That has withstood a nonpartisan audit, a whole bunch of lawsuits, a partial recount, a review by a Republican law firm, and a special counsel investigation that was headed up by a former Republican state Supreme Court official. And they didn't find any of this stuff that this guy, this U.S. Senate candidate, is now claiming. But he's been raising this issue of nursing home voting when he discusses what he said were problems with the 2020 election. Here's what he specifically said on that point.
We had nursing homes where the sheriff of Racine investigated where you had 100% voting in nursing homes. Well, if you're in a nursing home, you only have 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is in a point to vote.
Wow.
Okay, a couple of things there. Do you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy in a nursing home?
No.
I don't know what those numbers are. That seems kind of short. But in fact, this claim that he's making about 100% voting in nursing homes across Wisconsin, this was a claim first made by the former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman, the guy who was appointed to be the special counsel to look in this, to look at this matter in what has become a discredited report. These claims have never been confirmed as being accurate in any way. Actual voting data has shown that participation in nursing homes across the state was actually much lower than 100%. But, you know, there's not a lot to do in nursing homes, and ballots are often brought to them to make it easier for them to vote. So it would not be surprising necessarily if the rate of voting in such facilities was fairly high, it seems to me. But that's neither here nor there for now. Senator Baldwin, in reaction to Hovde's comments on this, said in response, quote, "Thousands of Wisconsinites live in nursing homes. Eric Hovde does not have a clue what he is talking about." In two subsequent interviews last week, when asked to clarify his comments on this in the wake of criticism, Hovde accused his opponents and the media of, quote, "political hits." They tried to say, "I didn't want elderly people to vote," Hovde said on Monday. "I don't even know how they came up with that." He dug deeper thereafter when he said, quote, "a large percentage of nursing home residents," quote, "are not in the mental capacity to vote." He's not winning. He's not winning friends at the
I know
at the
a
old
lot of
home.
Seniors who will not be happy with that assessment.
But he clarified that he doesn't think that elderly people should not be allowed to vote. Quote, "I think elderly should absolutely vote," he said last Wednesday on WSAU-AM. Now, again, I'm no political advisor, but it seems to me that when you have to make statements like, "I think elderly should absolutely vote," your campaign may not be in a great place. I don't know. I'm just saying. Hovde's party has not been a great help. However, Republicans in the still wildly gerrymandered state of Wisconsin in the legislature there have tried to restrict rules for voting in nursing homes. But their measures have either failed to pass, even in a state legislature with supermajorities or near supermajorities of Republicans in both chambers, or those measures have been vetoed by the state's Democratic governor, Tony Evers. Still, nonetheless, Trump's GOP is preparing yet again for what they seem to be describing as another all-out war on voting in 2024. I'm sure this does not shock you, but some of the details might. Former President Donald Trump's political operation said late last week that it plans to deploy what it is describing as a, quote, "historic 100,000 person strong election integrity operation." Though don't let the name fool you there. The way that they describe it is it will include more than 100,000 attorneys and volunteers across battleground states to monitor and, yes, potentially challenge vote counting this November. According to Politico, the initiative, which the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee described in their joint press release, because frankly they are now all but one in the same, the Trump campaign and the RNC, they described it as, quote, "the most extensive and monumental election integrity program in the nation's history." It will include training poll watchers and workers, as well as lawyers. The program underscores Trump's ongoing fixation with election security, Politico reports, which he deployed in an attempt to undermine the results. Politico means to steal the results of the 2020 election, despite the widespread conclusion, even among Republican officials, that there was no widespread fraud. But you got to give Donald Trump credit for keeping up the lie, don't you? No, you don't. Trump has warned supporters without evidence that Democrats could try to rig the 2024 election. Trump made the same false claims about the 2020 election, which he unsuccessfully tried to overturn. They mean tried to steal. And in fact, he didn't claim that they could try to rig the election in 2020. He said that they were rigging the election in 2020. He said that before the election, and that they did rig the election after it was clear that he had lost. And yes, he did the very same thing back in 2016, the 2016 election. Said they were rigging it until he won it. Even if he had to, you know, cheat in that election by, I don't know, paying off people that he had sex with to keep quiet about it. Trump has privately complained that his political apparatus was not adequately prepared for the legal battles in the 2020 election. He has made clear to advisors that he would like a more robust effort to be able to challenge election results as needed in 2024. It's also a sign that should Trump once again attempt to overturn the election, he will already have in place tens of thousands of workers who could help with that effort. Now, to be fair, I don't mind at all if he and the Republicans deploy thousands of people to watch the polling places as they see fit and to watch counting. I really don't mind that. I hope that Democrats and independents do the same. I have been calling for and supporting poll watchers who do exactly that for years. I don't care what party they're in. The more people overseeing the process, the better, in my opinion. In fact, it's good specifically to have Republicans overseeing it and working as poll workers, et cetera. Because when people actually see the process, when they actually see how it works, it seems that they are less likely to make false claims about the process and about chicanery at the polling places. If you're a Republican poll worker, you probably want to end up defending your work rather than saying, oh, yeah, we were cheating. It becomes a problem, however, if these people, these poll watchers, are there to try and intimidate voters or to make false challenges about who can and can't vote. And it becomes a problem when your party's standard bearer, its nominee for the presidency, is echoing almost exactly Joseph Stalin, who famously is credited with saying, quote, I consider it completely unimportant who in the party will vote or how, but what is extraordinarily important is this, who will count the votes and how. That quote, translated quote, has generally been shortened since Stalin supposedly uttered it to Communist Party officials in the Soviet Union back in 1923. It's sort of been shorted to something like, it doesn't matter who votes, what matters is who counts the votes, or something like that. So it doesn't help that Donald Trump said in a statement, along with the announcement of these supposedly 100,000 poll watchers and attorneys, he said, quote, having the right people to count the ballots is just as important as turning out voters on election day. It's kind of Stalin-y.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost exactly what Stalin supposedly said. Doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the votes. Not a good look. According to the Trump campaign announcement, the operation plans to deploy lawyers to monitor voter machine testing, early voting, election day voting, mail ballot processing, and post-election canvassing, auditing, and recounts. The campaign also plans to station lawyers at mail-in voting processing centers, and they set up a hotline that poll watchers and voters can use to report problems. Again, no real problems with any of that in general. But then the RNC says things like this, that they will have attorneys stationed at, quote, every single target processing center where mail ballots are tabulated.
What does that mean?
What's a target processing center? Those involved in the drafting of the program include the RNC chair, Michael Whatley, who has argued that the 2020 election was stolen, the RNC co-chair, Laura Trump, who is Trump's daughter-in-law. In a statement, the RNC's general counsel, all of whom, by the way, were just recently installed into the RNC by Trump himself, general counsel Charlie Spies said, quote, in 2024, we're going to beat the Democrats at their own game. And the RNC legal team will be working tirelessly to ensure that election officials follow the rules in administering elections. We will aggressively take them to court if they don't follow the rules or try to change them at the last minute. But of course, as Politico notes, after the 2020 election, Trump pressured government workers to overturn the election results and regularly spread false claims about fraud. That led to the January 6 mob of Trump supporters storming the Capitol in an attempt to steal the election. It's one of many ways that Trump tried but failed to steal the election. This time, he seems to be vowing he will be more prepared in advance to do so if necessary, even as he faces both state and federal criminal charges for having done so back in 2020. And yes, even in 2016, as he committed, according to New York prosecutors on Monday in the Stormy Daniels case, quote, election fraud, pure and simple. Finally, last month at a rally in Virginia, Trump told supporters, quote, we want a landslide that is too big to rig. That's why we that's what we need, because we're going to be they're going to be cheating, and they're cheaters, and we're going to be watching them, and we're going to prosecute. OK, Donnie, but you might want to look around, because that call once again seems to be coming from inside your own house. A top leader of the National Right-wing Turning Point Action Group, which would be a part of his 100,000-strong team of election watchers. They have spent years amplifying Trump's false claims. So a top leader with the Turning Point Action Group, who happens to be an elected official, resigned from Turning Point Action on Thursday after being accused of forging voter signatures on official paperwork so that he could run for re-election in the Arizona House. Hi, Carrie Lake. Hi, Carrie Lake. Yes, that's right. He's an elected official in the Arizona State House, an elected state legislator. State Rep Austin Smith, Republican, who was senior director at Turning Point Action, the campaign arm of Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA, was accused by a Democratic activist of submitting petition sheets with rows of voter names, addresses, and signatures that, quote, bear a striking resemblance to Austin Smith's own handwriting, according to the complaint.
Oh, dear.
Smith, quote, personally circulated multiple petition sheets bearing what appear to be forged voter signatures, the complaint said. It was sent to the Arizona Secretary of State. He forwarded it to the Arizona Attorney General for review. But as that's being reviewed, Smith submitted his resignation to Turning Point Action on Thursday. He also publicly ended his reelection campaign to the Arizona State House. In a statement, the first-term lawmaker said the allegations against him were, quote, silly. They were part of a, quote, coordinated attack by Democrats and, quote, those unhappy with my politics. Okay, so why did you quit everything, Austin? Smith is aligned with some of the farthest-right members of the Arizona House, and he has previously derided signature verification work by local election officials as, quote, a joke. Well, I guess it's not quite a joke now, is it, Austin? He said on Twitter, the prospects of costly and public fallout from the allegations shaped his decision to drop out of the race. He said, quote, "The recommendation I received most was that I bow out and live to fight another day. I might be confident of victory, but all it would take is a judge believing any one person and all would be lost." Well, sounds like a pretty good signature verification system there, actually.
Yes, it does.
The complaint alleged that Smith submitted multiple pages with dozens of forged signatures that he claimed to have collected. His withdrawal drew immediate reaction from members of his own party, including Maricopa County Supervisor Clint Hickman, who had been targeted after the 2020 election. He's a Republican, but he had been targeted with death threats and everything else. He said, quote, "This is a man who has lied to the people of Legislative District 29, where Hickman happens to live, and the entire state about our election operations for at least 3 years." Hickman said in a statement, now he's accused of lying about the signatures he personally collected to get on the ballot again. An investigation, he said, will reveal the truth. And we will look forward to it. Green News Report is next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com. We fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. No chitter-chattery, Desi Doyen. We got to get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
From rising sea temperatures to melting glaciers, Europe is witnessing the worst effects of global warming.
Europe is the fastest warming continent on the planet, study warns. Plastics manufacturers are big contributors to man-made global warming. Plus,
solar for all is a win for the environment, a win for consumers, and a win for job creation.
Biden administration unveils Solar for All program, American Climate Corps, and sweeping new actions on conservation.
And I guess Bernie likes it?
Yep.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Did you see this news about Lunchables today? I mean, it turns out that they have dangerous amounts of lead. Why do we do this? Why do we poison everything? Lunchables are supposed to be healthy. Okay, they're not, but they shouldn't have f***ing lead in them.
This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, it doesn't stop. The Biden administration just keeps on doing one big move after another these days.
Yes, they do, and we'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
But first, Europe is the fastest warming continent on the planet, heating up twice as fast as the global average. According to the EU's climate service Copernicus in its annual State of the Climate report, heat-related deaths in Europe have increased more than 30% in the last 20 years. The last 3 years were Europe's three warmest years on record since record keeping began in 1850. In 2023, Europe witnessed its largest wildfire on record, one of its wettest years, severe marine heat waves, and devastating flooding. Copernicus estimated that in 2023, Europe's climate-related economic losses topped $120 billion U.S. dollars.
Wow.
The theme of Earth Day 2024 was Planet versus Plastics, pushing governments to combat the global scourge of plastic pollution. Now, a new study from the Berkeley National Labs finds that manufacturing of plastics is also a significant contributor to man-made climate change.
You mean just the act of making the plastic?
Yes. Well, plastics are currently made almost exclusively from fossil fuels. The fossil and plastics industries oppose phasing out single-use plastics and prefer expanding recycling, which critics argue shifts the cost burden of plastic pollution to communities.
Not to mention the fact that recycling doesn't work.
Yep. Here in the U.S., polluters will have to pay to clean up PFAS forever chemicals under new rules finalized by the Environmental Protection Agency.
Good.
PFAS chemicals are carcinogens that don't break down in the environment and are used in a host of products and industrial processes.
From nonstick pans to fireproof pajamas.
Yep. And EPA has now designated two PFAS chemicals as hazardous substances under the Superfund law, which forces manufacturers to pay the cost of cleanup, not communities. Last week, EPA issued new rules requiring utilities to reduce PFAS in drinking water to near zero levels. Some big conservation moves. Last week, the Biden Interior Department banned new oil and gas drilling in nearly half of Alaska's National Petroleum Reserve, protecting its wilderness and its wildlife. The decision does not affect Biden's approval last year of Alaska's controversial Willow oil drilling project, but Interior also says it will deny a permit for an industrial road through pristine wilderness and the gates of the Arctic National Park. And Interior also finalized a major management rule that, for the very first time, gives conservation, recreation, and renewable energy equal priority with extraction industries on the public's lands, meaning the U.S. will no longer prioritize resource extraction above all other uses.
Good, for now, until the next guy gets in there.
And finally, President Biden marked Earth Day by announcing $7 billion in investments in community and rooftop solar projects nationwide, benefiting low- and middle-income communities. The Solar for All program is funded by the Inflation Reduction Act and will create an estimated 200,000 jobs.
Remind me, how many Republicans voted for that bill again?
They all voted against it.
Oh.
Senator Bernie Sanders and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez joined Biden in Virginia for the launch of the American Climate Corps, a New Deal-style program that will serve as a major green jobs training program for young people in clean energy and conservation.
It's patterned after the Civilian Conservation Corps and the Peace Corps and America Corps. Like them, it brings out the best in young people to do what's best for America. And we'll put tens of thousands of young people to work at the forefront of our climate resilience and energy future, clean energy future.
He keeps going, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Now, if only people know about it. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. I like it a lot.
Yeah, and there's more coming down the pike,
too. Is there?
Yes.
It really is. Like, every day, there's like two or three announcements of some amazing stuff.
And they are not slowing down.
Not slowing down and not getting the coverage that it deserves. Well, you know why. Anyway, we got to get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always an honor. It's always greatly appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. While you're there, please hit one of those donate buttons to help us stay on your public airwaves. We really need your support right now to make it through this election year. You can also go to bradblog.com/donate. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Elon Musk's failing Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.